For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here for the next couple of hours talking about the Winnipeg Jets, doing a deep dive into the hometown team. Of course, the Jets suffering a defeat last night at the hands of the Dallas Stars, 4-3 in overtime. When you couple that result with everything else that happened around the league, the Jets remain 6 points out of the second wild card spot currently held by the Nashville Predators, but with the Edmonton Oilers tied with the Predators, mere percentage points behind them in the standings. Gentlemen, long time no see. Good to see you on this Saturday morning. Ezzy, you're decked out fully in IC gear. You got your IC t-shirt. You got your IC toque. Dave's wearing the hoodie. Dave's wearing the hat. I'm just wearing the t-shirt. I feel underdressed compared to you fine gentlemen.
That's IC all day, every day, right? And, you know, Drew, just, you know, mentioning those standings in the Western Conference, right? Like, yeah. After the Jets game last night, you know, the Golden Knights were actually momentarily out of a playoff spot, and they obviously won. And so I believe now they're third in their division, but it shows you, you know, how much, you know, of a logjam this is, right? Like Dallas could have, you know, fallen to only a couple points ahead of the Jets, right? If you go back to, you know, all these games between the Jets and the Stars, the Jets could have easily, you know, been tied with the Stars or 1 or 2 points behind. And as you mentioned, now the Stars are in that first wild card spot, as opposed to kind of being, you know, one of those teams along with Vancouver and Anaheim who are kind of in that kind of 9th, 10th, 11th spot, right? So it's just so close. And, you know, we'll get into the game again. We obviously broke it down goal by goal last night on the postgame show, but that was just one of those games where it kind of, you know, has been the story of the season where, you know, the Jets are close to getting a clean 2 points and then they end up losing, you know, the extra point. We talked about it 10 times. You know, the Jets have left a point on the table. So, you know, there's obviously a huge game coming up tomorrow night against the Rangers, and then you've got the Lightning here. So, I mean, it's not going to get any easier here, but I mean, it's just, you know, one of those situations where it's another point lost for the Jets as opposed to, you know, moving up the standings. You're just continuing to kind of stay in that same place where you're just kind of barely holding on to being in the playoff race.
Yes, exactly right. Well put there, Ezzy. And that's sort of where I wanted to start off this morning, Dave, is the idea about this team and their performance in overtime or in the shootout. Because, you know, we know the Jets have left a lot of points on the board this year, but it really wasn't until yesterday that it sort of really hit me just how different their fortunes would be or how different they would be in terms of the standings if they had a little more success in the bonus 5 minutes and or the shootout. I mean, 2-6 in overtime now, 1-4 in shootouts, 3-10 overall. As we talked about on the post game yesterday, you know, you take that 3-10 record overall and you sort of flip it on its head, or you even just, you know, pick up an extra, you know, you make it a little bit more equitable, and the Jets are right in the thick of it even more if they're not in a playoff spot itself. You know, From your guys' perspective, and I'll start with you, Dave, because we haven't heard from you yet this morning. What do you attribute the Jets' lack of success in extra time to being? Is it too cautious? Is it just, you know, almost the coin flip nature of overtime and the shootout? Is there something that they can do to really improve upon their performance in that extra time? Or is it just sort of the vagaries of playing 3-on-3 hockey? And how random it can be.
I mean, I think all of those things contribute to you. I don't think there's any question about it. I think that, you know, with the amount of talent the Jets have, especially offensive talent, that, you know, 3-on-3 overtime should be their bread and butter. I mean, when you can throw, obviously Nikolaj Ehlers has missed the last 19 games, which is a factor, but when you can throw Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers, for Mark Scheifele's defensive deficiencies, we know he's more than capable in the offensive zone. So when you have those kind of players, right, at Pierre-Luc Dubois, there's a multitude of names that you can use that should say, yeah, you're right, Drew. The reality is these guys not getting those points in the extra frame has cost them. And I, you know, you're right. It's funny because you talking about how it made you reflect. I reflected on it too after you brought it up last night, and it, your point about them being just, you know, 50% or 60% in those times. And you're right there. You're right in the, and that's kind of been the theme. I feel like we've talked about a lot is missed opportunity with this Jets club. And, you know, I saw some people in the chat were talking about how the Jets had used three forwards in overtime. And maybe that was something they should have, you know, they had a little success with it earlier in the season and then they went away from it. So, you know, sometimes coaches out-coach themselves. And, you know, like, I think you call it coach's brain. And I just think, like, it's one of those situations where it's the like, why break up Pierre-Luc Dubois, Kyle Connor, and Evgeny Svechnikov, right? They were going well. You broke them up. That's obviously Paul Maurice, you broke them up. Didn't make a lot of sense to a lot of us who thought that line looks good. Now, you know, when you're needing, when Cole Perfetti goes down and you need to fill that spot, Evgeny Svechnikov is mysteriously sitting in the, you know, press box watching games, not playing, when you know that he, in that muscle memory idea, has played well with those guys. So eventually you go back to him and, oh, lo and behold, that line is having a lot of success. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes, like I said, these guys tend to overthink it and overcoach it. And it sometimes is as simple as, hey, here's a crazy notion. Let's put Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor, and Mark Scheifele out on 3-on-3. You know, there's going to be no defense. There's none. So we have to score in the first 30 seconds. But if we get the puck, no other team is going to touch that puck. So, I mean, it's a risk-reward, obviously. But I just think that there's a lot to look, you said it. And it's one of those things that when the season ends at the end of April,
yeah,
are we going to look back and say, well, you know what? The Jets missed out on, you know, you're not going to get, they're not going to get every, they weren't going to win every game in overtime, sure, but the Jets missed out on 5 to 7 points, mm-hmm, you know, and couple that with games that they should have won. And, you know, the Phoenix game, the Canucks game, there's a handful of games Buffalo that they lost.
Game, Chicago game.
Buffalo, yeah, game, Islanders, yeah, game, Chicago game. So there's another, I mean, we go through the handful of losses that they lost, you know, where they didn't get any points. So I, you know, that's what will, that'll be the evaluation at the end of the season, but it's definitely relevant right now because as you said, as bad as the Jets have played over the little bit of, you know, this last little stretch, mm-hmm, the truth is, and I wrote about it in the papers this morning, Minnesota 3-7-0. You've got Nashville 3-6-1. So the teams that were, now the difference is that they've banked quite a few points. So they have a bit of a buffer. They can weather that storm. But as you touched on, Nashville's only 6 points ahead of the Jets. Like at one point, it looked like, I think they were, what, 13? Yeah, you know, Minnesota was like 17 points ahead of the Jets. So, you know, in it, like, it's crazy because the Jets haven't been playing particularly well, but they're still not that far behind some of these teams. So they've shot themselves in the foot because they've had opportunities to get back into this race. And then performances like last night are why they're not.
And, you know, sticking, just going to say, you know, Drew, just kind of sticking, you know, with the kind of idea of, you know, where the Jets have failed and where the Jets have succeeded specifically in overtime. I would say, you know, just watching this team through, you know, 55 games this year, I'm not talking about previous years. One thing that kind of stands out to me, and, you know, it was a little bit on display with, you know, you mentioned this on the post game show last night, talking about, you know, Neil Pionk's awareness, whether or not Braden Holtby, you know, got a piece of it or not. We still don't really know because it looks like he might have, but the reality is it wasn't a lot because the puck obviously, you know, rims hard around and comes back to Jason Robertson, right? But one thing, you know, that I would, you know, point out with the Jets this year is you've seen, I think, on many occasions, you know, players taking shifts a little bit too long, and you've also seen, you know, transition offense and maybe high-risk plays coming back to bite them. That's what I would say. And obviously, that's the MO in overtime, right? Like you're trying to win. Once you get to that extra point, you're trying to score on every shift. Obviously you need to have the puck to do that, but I mean, you're not just playing a patient game. I mean, you have to be aggressive. And so I would point to that. Maybe at some points, you know, the Jets are maybe a little bit too aggressive, but I don't know, guys, if there's one or two magic solutions, because Drew, the reality is Pierre-Luc Dubois hits the post yesterday, right? We talked about that. It was a clever little shot. Braden Holtby, I mean, he had Holtby beat. The only thing he didn't beat was the post, right? So the Jets could have easily got, you know, the extra point. And you go back, and if we were to break down and go back and kind of do one of those like deep dive, you know, that they do on The Athletic, kind of breaking down, you know, each overtime that the Jets have either won a point or lost a point, there would be good scoring chances from the Jets in most of those games, right? Like the Jets are not badly outplayed on a regular basis in overtime. It's just that they haven't finished. So that's what I would point to at times is that, you know, over aggression has led to attacks coming the other way. But again, that's the nature of overtime. It's back and forth.
Sure. And I mean, from my perspective, I'd much rather see a team take an aggressive stance in overtime, I would have no problem if the Jets played, you know, started with three forwards more regularly, like we've seen in years past in overtime. I mean, I think it's so, I mean, you know, there's only three guys on the ice. It's so random that you might as well go pedal to the metal, at least for the first 40 seconds of overtime to start it off. See if you can win it early, you know, go for the gold rather than sort of play a more cautious approach to overtime. But, you know, I have to believe it's that, you know, especially overtime is something that's likely over the number of years going to regress back to the mean. If you're 3-10 this year in overtime, you very well might be 10-3 next year in overtime. Not that that does you any good this year where you're struggling to make the playoffs and everything. But to your point, Ezzy, it doesn't seem like there's any, like, I don't see any strategic flaws necessarily. I don't think they're being overwhelmingly passive or anything when it comes to their overtime strategy. But, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois hits the post. And I think it's just almost to some extent the story of the Jets season that they've always been within, you know, they've been close. There's been so many games where they've been close, but they're just not succeeding. They're not quite getting to where they need to be. And their margin of error is so thin this year that they always are on the wrong side of the ledger. I mean, this Jets team, this doesn't have to do with overtime because, you know, overtime's obviously 3-on-3, but this Jets team is 28th in the NHL at 5-on-5 shooting percentage. I mean, nobody would have expected that at the beginning of the year with a team.
I don't think they had a 5-on-5 shot in the first period, Drew. No, I mean, there were a lot of penalties, but I don't think I think I could have sworn Dennis said on the broadcast they didn't have a shot at 5-on-5, in the first at least.
Really? I mean, I was at the game.
I think he mentioned that. I'm
fairly sure. Drew had his beer goggles on, Dave.
Yeah. There were, like I said, I wasn't tracking
5-on-5 shot attempts.
Yeah. Why don't you pen and paper in hand, Drew?
Exactly. I was taking notes like a scout wearing a trench coat in the corner, like a scout watching the game. But I mean, if that's the case, then that's inexcusable. I know there was a lot of most of the game, certainly in the first period, and had plenty of penalties, but you just can't have, that little success at 5-on-5. And I mean, that is often the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team, especially if you're in that sort of what I'll call the mushy middle, where you're not a dominant force like, say, the Colorado Avalanche or some of the upper echelon teams this year who can be successful and are successful almost, you know, regardless of their performance, because that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, they just have so much talent that they can overcome issues they're facing. This Jets team, you know, isn't able to overcome those issues. And this is just another example of it last night in a game you had to have against the Dallas Stars, where you have a late third period lead and you can't hold the lead. And then in overtime, you know, what happens, as you said, Ezzy, you know, you hit a post, you hit a crossbar, and Dallas really, I mean, that was really Dallas's best opportunity in the entire overtime. And they score, just more opportunistic. I think, you know, at the end of the year, whenever that year ends, this Jets team is going to rue the fact that they weren't able to capitalize on the opportunities that were in front of them at, you know, various times throughout the course of the 82-game season.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we've got the comment up from Rob Mahoney. Good to see Rob back. Like, he's right. And, you know, you could argue that, you know, this is a byproduct of not finishing games off in the third period, right? Like, again, last night, right, where the Jets had a lead. You know, with 5 minutes left in the final period, right? So you look at and I mean, it is something, you know, that is at the end of the day when the season's over, you're going to look back and all of those points lost in overtime or the shootout, that is going to be one of the main reasons why you do or don't make the playoffs, right? And you look at a team like Colorado, they've only lost 4 in overtime, right? Like Minnesota's only lost 3. The Jets have lost 10. Like that's a big difference. And I agree. I mean, like, you know, I saw another comment like the Jets, someone was saying the Jets might lead the league in, you know, posts and crossbars. I agree. Like, it's not like the Jets aren't getting those opportunities. And, you know, Kyle Connors, he's going to set a new career high for goals. Like Pierre-Luc Dubois, he's having a great bounce back season. Adam Lowry, you know, he was on a 3-goal goal scoring streak. Like finally the Jets, and it, by the way, it helps to play the Coyotes and the Canadians, but they were obviously, you know, beginning to light it up, scored three goals last night. I think it's that. It's also, you know, a combination of, you know, not getting timely goals either in the third period or overtime, and Connor Hellebuck, you know, maybe making one or two saves that, you know, wins you the game. Like last night, a perfect example, you know, Jason Robertson. I mean, I wouldn't want to be a goalie with him coming down with 25, 26 goals, right? Like he's got a great shot. So, I mean, we're not blaming Hellebuck on that goal, obviously, because Jason Robertson was on a breakaway, and it's always, you know, you're going to give the advantage to the shooter in that particular case, especially when he had two goals earlier in the game, right? So,
especially when he's a guy who's going to get 30 or 35 goals or even 40 goals maybe this year. Robertson is a goal scorer.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, Hellebuck is the guy that you want in net on a breakaway in overtime. But I mean, the numbers have shown this year that Hellebuck's just not playing at that same level. And again, I still believe he's one of the best goalies in the league. Like, I don't know if, you know, he still has that top throne, because Igor Shesterkin, I think, is going to win the Vezina this year. I mean, there's going to be some, you know, some competition from a guy like UC Saros or Andrei Vasilevsky. Even a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky, I think, is in the Vezina conversation. But Shesterkin, I think, and we talked to Mike McKenna about this last week, I mean, based on his stats and save percentage, goals saved above expected, all that stuff, I mean, he's really good. So the point is,
Shesterkin should be in the Hart conversation. I mean, he won't be because Hellebuck wasn't when he won the Vezina, because they don't give goaltenders the Hart anymore for whatever reason. But Shesterkin,
well, Jose Theodore ruined that, right?
Well, I mean, that was a long time ago now. Shesterkin's got a 940 save percentage and a 1.96 goals against average. The Jets hope that it's not Shesterkin in net for the Rangers tomorrow night. They hope that it's Georgiev. I don't know who it's going to be yet, but the Jets wouldn't surprise me if it's Georgiev, because, you know, the Jets are, you know, they're not considered an upper echelon team. They're considered an opportunity for a team to play the backup goaltender, like we saw Dallas do last night with Braden Holtby. Although Holtby, you know, I thought played a very strong game for Dallas.
Holtby hadn't played in a while, so that might have factored in as well, you know, opposed to. I think you're right, though. I mean, maybe the Rangers, you know, consider, you know, Georgiev. It's the first game of a four-game road trip, right? But, you know, we're going to talk about the Rangers, you know, in a little bit with Jeff Hamilton. But the Rangers, actually, even though they've won their last couple of games, they were badly out. If you read Larry Brooks' column in the New York Post, they were badly outplayed by the Devils, who actually have been playing, you know, pretty well lately. Jack Hughes has been popping them in left, right, and center. But, I mean, the big difference in last night's game, one of the main reasons they won, is because Shesterkin, again, was incredible. So, yeah, the Jets would definitely catch a break if it was Georgiev. But Georgiev is a pretty good goalie as well.
Yeah, he's not a bad goalie. He's potentially on the trade block, and the Rangers could get a hefty return for him, because by most people's estimation, Georgiev has everything that you would want in a starting goaltender as well. He just has the best goalie in the league, or one of the top three goalies in the league, blocking him at this moment. In any event, we're getting ahead of ourselves, and as you said, we're going to talk more about the Rangers and the Jets ahead of tomorrow evening's game a little bit later on in the program. We say good morning to everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on a Saturday morning talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Our Betway question of the day, it's now on the screen. The trade deadline, a little more than 2 weeks away, 2 weeks plus 2 days. If the Jets trade Andrew Kopp prior to the March 21st trade deadline, what do you think they will get in return? We want your comments in the chat. Be sure to put them there. We'll throw them up on the screen. That is the Betway question of the day, as the trade deadline is rapidly approaching over the next couple of weeks. And we'll talk, of course, about the trade deadline. We'll talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments to Pierre LeBrun in The Athletic earlier. They were published yesterday morning. Some interesting comments from the Jets general manager. I mean, where the Jets currently sit, guys, you're 2 weeks away from the deadline. Let's assume that the Jets will be in a similar spot to where they are now, maybe even if they're a couple points closer to the playoff mark. Can you articulate a scenario for me where the Jets shouldn't be sellers at the trade deadline?
The silence you're hearing from both Andy and I is
speaks volumes.
I think it speaks volumes. I mean, it's hard to argue, because look, I just don't see a path to getting Andrew Kopp signed next year. I think if you thought you could do it, you know, and you knew this year was going to be tight to the cap, but you might have some flexibility with although Paul Stastny's certainly not showing any slowing down with age. I mean, he's eclipsed his goal mark from last year. He had 13 last year in 56 games for the Jets. He has 15 in what does he play now? 45, I think. So he's on pace, and he had 17 2 years ago with the Golden Knights in 71 games. So Stastny's having a kind of a bounce back year. I mean, he's one of the guys we're not really talking about, but he's producing. And one of the plays we didn't talk about was that beautiful pass by Kyle Connor over to Stastny that he kind of hit out of the air and resulted in a good chance. Hope he made the save, but could have easily been a goal. So I think it's one of those situations, Drew, where you're sitting there going, okay, well, the two players that are on the that in theory are going to be that would be gone are Paul Stastny and Andrew Kopp. Those are the only two. Jets aren't making a blockbuster deal. They don't do that at the best of times, and they certainly aren't going to do that at the trade deadline. So, I mean, realistically, you're trading away Kopp because you want to recoup something for him because you know you're not going to keep him, and you want to be able to get some assets, and perhaps Stastny as well, because there's going to be interest in adding a veteran presence like Stastny who can play up and down a team's lineup. So it's hard to argue against it, because what is this team right now? What has this team shown? Have they shown that they're going to be a dominant team? I mean, your 9-2-2 stretch was 4 months ago or something like that, or 3 months ago. So you don't have a body of work to say, look, we deserve this. We're showing you that, we won, as Ezzie talked about last night. Did you win 7 games in a row? Like, you beat the two teams that you needed to beat in Arizona and Montreal, but you didn't beat Dallas. Like, if you beat Dallas last night and then you beat the Rangers and then you beat Tampa, well, maybe you're forcing the general manager's hand. But if you have middling success up until for the next 2 weeks and you don't beat the Rangers or you don't beat Tampa, it's hard to justify retention because, like I said, at the end of the day, a general manager can't think about just 1 year. They have to think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. That's just the nature of their job. So if you don't think you're going to be able to stay in contention, and the truth also is that, you do have guys who can come up and play for the Jets if need be. David Gustafson isn't Andrew Kopp. I'd say he's an Andrew Kopp light, defensively responsible, maybe not as offensively talented, not as good a skater. But the reality is you do have the opportunity to plug and play guys if you have to remove them. Cole Perfetti, we don't know how much longer he's going to be out for. He's on LTIR, so he's, I think, unavailable for at least another week or so. But the reality is you could put Cole Perfetti in the lineup if you need to remove a Paul Stastny. Maybe Cole Perfetti plays really well with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and you're filling a spot with, a player who's more than capable of playing at the NHL level. So, I mean, again, you don't have the depth. You don't have that luxury anymore, which means your fourth line gets populated with the Austin Pagansky's and the CJ Ceases. But at the same time, you're recouping assets for later in the year that you're not going to get back because the likelihood of signing these guys, we don't know what the conversations are like. You're always having conversations. And people love conversations. So
conversations involve people talking back and forth. That's Thank right. you, Kevin. Appreciate the insight there. We knew what a conversation was.
Right. If Kevin Sheveldayoff doesn't say the word conversation at least 13 times in a media availability, then something's wrong.
But he just likes to talk.
Yeah. And have conversations. So I just think that we don't know the nature if they're having discussions with either of those two to talk about what it could look like in the summer. They'll have the best indication as to what their capability of signing an Andrew Kopp or, a Paul Stastny is going to be for next season. And that will, I think, shape his decision-making.
But you're not going to be able to sign both Pierre-Luc Dubois and Andrew Kopp without moving another piece in addition to losing Paul Stastny. What I mean is that you just don't have enough money. Right? Like, just look at, we talked about Dubois. He's going to be around $8 million, right? Like, we won't get into the, the fine, details of the contract, but he's going to be around an $8 million a year player, right? Maybe a little bit higher. And then Andrew Kopp is going to be around, $4.5 million? So you're going to lose Stastny's contract possibly. So you can use some of that money, but it's not going to be enough money, right? And you do have to sign a few RFAs, right? So
Well, I mean, I think Justin makes a good point here. Unless you're somehow getting rid of the Dylan contract or the Nate Schmidt contract that you acquired last offseason to shore up your blue line, there's no room. I mean, if you somehow are dumping those salaries, you know, then maybe you could, maybe there ends up being some room for both Kopp and Dubois.
Well, that would be the only way.
The issue there, guys, is, you know, and you know, Justin brings up a good point that those are the obvious ones, because I think we would all agree the two defensemen that have term left that really the Jets aren't considering trading are Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, right? Obviously, the younger defensemen we're not throwing in there, but, you know, the Dave knows this. The Jets organizationally are much stronger on the left side. So the issue I have, if you're trading Nate Schmidt, you've still got Neil Pionk and you've still got Dylan DeMello on the right side. But after that, you know, it gets pretty thin, right? Like, you know, a guy like Johnny Kovacevic, maybe he can be a third pairing defenseman for you next year. But I would be a little hesitant, you know, to move a guy like Nate Schmidt. I realize that, you know, sometimes, you know, he struggled a little bit defensively, but I really like him. I like what he's brought to this team. So even though I think, you know, we would agree Pionk and DeMello are probably ahead of him on the right side, if you've got Nate Schmidt as your third pairing defenseman, yes. Are you overpaying him to be that role? Yes. But he can move up and easily play in your top four, right? So that's the only thing I would say to that. So I think, you know, you have, if you're Chevy, we obviously don't know. We don't have a crystal ball, but you have to be considering, you know, trading both Kopp and Stastny at this point. Yes. Could both of those guys, you know, come back next year? Of course. But that's the big unknown. The big mystery here is that, you know, Kopp is on that, you know, 1 year deal, and it's really unclear, you know, has the plan been all along to sign him to a long-term deal? I really don't know. It's a tough one for me, but, you know, people are talking about, you know, different scenarios. I would think that, you know, if you're trading Andrew Kopp, who's probably going to be a rental, you're probably looking at, you know, a 2022 second rounder, maybe a 2023 second rounder. Like, a lot of people have talked about, you know, Kopp for DeBrusk straight up. Like, I don't see that happening. Like, DeBrusk is in the last year of his deal, but he's a pending RFA. So I just don't know. I think, you know, that might be a little bit just too convenient, because everybody knows DeBrusk is a guy that, you know, requested a trade, right? So I would assume it would probably be a couple of second rounders, Dave. I mean, could you get a first rounder for Andrew Kopp? Maybe. But the thing that makes it tricky is that he's a rental, most likely.
Well, I'll just quickly jump in last before we go to break. But I mean, the one thing I was going to quickly add is, you know, and is Andrew Kopp, I mean, Andrew Kopp, there's no question in my mind, he thinks he's worth $5 million. So, but I don't think he's worth $5 million. So the truth is, you can't really afford him, even if you've got, you know, because you have to, again, like I said, it's the ramifications, not just for next season's salary cap, but the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. And there's going to be other guys you're going to have to re-sign. And sure, Blake Wheeler's $8.3 million is eventually going to come off the books. But that's actually, relatively speaking, a long ways away. And there's other things you're going to have to factor in. So can David Gustafson come in and be Andrew Kopp beside Adam Lowry? Personally, I think he can. Again, I think it'll take some time for him to get up to speed. But you know what? Here's a crazy notion. If you deal Andrew Kopp this year, guess what? David Gustafson can be a feature on that third line with Adam Lowry right away.
Let's head to break. When we come back, more Jets talk with our buddy Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. It's a Saturday morning. Smash the like button. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, the bottom of the hour has come and gone. 9:34 in the
just
morning.
Just got a lot more handsome on this show, let me tell you that much.
No question about it, but we also know better than to get into a pissing match with our next guest on the program from the Winnipeg Free Press, Jeff Hamilton. And Jeffrey, you have to know that I was definitely coming with a comment like that to begin this appearance.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Good to be on, first and foremost, I think. Secondly, I saw your tee up on Twitter, and I had pushed the quote tweet, and I was like, come join me in the piss, boys. But then I didn't know if that was legit. And then I was like, am I antagonizing by retweeting this and suggesting? But I figured, you know what, it's been an interesting week. I know you guys wanted me on a couple weeks ago, so I couldn't come on, but I think the timing is right on this one, perhaps.
Well, we just had to send an e-transfer to Remus from Winnipeg Sports Talk, so it's all good now. He got the e-transfer.
Fair enough. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Jeff. It has certainly been an interesting time for the Winnipeg Jets and for this team, and another hard, just a tough loss last night, a game they had to have, a game that was within their grasp, and they managed to lose it in regulation, or they don't lose it in regulation, they lose the lead in regulation, and then they ultimately lose the game in overtime. You know, we were talking about the trade deadline, which is 2 weeks plus 2 days away from now. Can you foresee any circumstance, Jeff, no matter, you know, even if this team goes on a run between now and the 21st, that this team shouldn't be a seller come the trade deadline. I mean, you know, we read Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments in The Athletic yesterday. You know, there wasn't much substance to them. There wasn't much substance to the questions that he was asked either. But, you know, he's going to say he sort of has to toe the party line. But privately, do you think there's a way this team isn't a seller come trade deadline?
You know, it depends how you want to answer that question, Drew, because is there any reason to suggest the Jets are going to figure it out between now and, you know, 2 weeks from now?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, the only thing that's really been in their favor really is the fact that Nashville, has had kind of a tough go here. They've dropped in the standings. They've gotten a little bit of help. They just haven't been able to help the most important person, and that's themselves. And that's, you know, collecting wins. I mean, it's great that you can beat Montreal, Arizona, and I'm not going to come on here and shit on the Jets because, you know, we say beat the teams that are below you, right? And so it's all credit due there. I mean, get her done. But when you're playing Dallas, I mean, it's a microcosm of the entire season. The team that you're chasing, the team that you need to leapfrog, you've battled them hard for four games, all of which have required extra time, but you've end up outside the winner's circle on three of them. And that's just, the other part to that answer is whether or not you think Kevin Cheveldayoff, the one person, I mean, and Mark Chipman, of course, who pulls the strings on that, is thinking that they want to be sellers. And I think that's all that really matters. And I don't think we have much of an indication to go either way. Now, would I be surprised if all of a sudden they unloaded Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny, two guys that I'm sure you've talked at length about as pending free agents? No, it wouldn't be surprising, but I think it'd be equally not surprising that if they held on to them and somehow decided to go down with this ship, because as we all know, heading into this season, expectations were massive. It was the summer of Chevy, you know, trading for guys like Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon, you know, it shored up a roster. And now if you look at that, I mean, it looks closer than it is, right? You know, those 6 points, you look at the go, well, that's not that hard. I mean, it's 6 points, but the Jets don't play any of those teams really down the stretch here. And so that as much as the destiny is in their hands, and yes, they can go on a run here. Yes, they can narrow that gap. They don't have those big games against those teams that they're chasing down here in the stretch. And that's going to affect things. So at this point, I'm really fascinated. I would say this 2 weeks ago, I'd say this a month and a half, 2 months ago, how fascinating this time of the season was going to be, because I just don't think that Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Winnipeg Jets are ready to give up on this season. And I don't know, unless the Jets, you know, lose out here up to the trade deadline and things go really bad, do I see them, you know, turning ship. The other thing too is, we all know how passionate Blake Wheeler is. We all know the promises that were given to this veteran club. If you become a seller at the deadline, what message does that send to the locker room, and what effect will that have in the coming seasons? You know, that's a little bit hyperbolic. I don't think if you get rid of Stastny and Kopp, those veteran guys that you promised to make runs on are all of a sudden going to start stomping their feet. Those guys were gone anyways. But at the same time, it's just like I said, it's fascinating. I don't know which way they're going to go. Nothing would surprise me. You know, buying, selling wouldn't surprise me. I don't think they'd be much of buyers, although we know, guys, your victory or your ticket to getting in is playing the Colorado Avalanche if you could squeeze in. So there's lots of things that they need to take into consideration here. Personally, I think they're sellers. They have to be sellers. They're just not in a position to dominate any other team. But I also understand fans and people alike who want to see this team push down the path here, make that effort, and then, you know, go with the whole theory. Once you get in, anything can happen. So we'll see.
I agree with you 100%, Hammer. And right before you came on, we were talking about that. This is, you know, one of the more unpredictable years for the Jets, right? Like last year, I mean, there was a big call to acquire, obviously, a top four defenseman. And then we know what the big move was, bringing in Jordy Benn, right? So, I mean, I think this year, this year is even more unpredictable, just because we don't know what the extent of the negotiations with Andrew Kopp are, if there even have been negotiations, right? Like, so that's the big unknown. Like, is there a contract that's just kind of waiting in a drawer and it just, you know, needs a little bit more work, and they're going to sign Kopp, and then they have another plan to free up some more salary in the offseason, right? Like, Paul Stastny is, you know, the obvious one that you'd like to get something, because there's a good chance that you're not bringing him back. But wanted to ask you about Nikolaj Ehlers, right? Because obviously the end result yesterday was super disappointing. So he was obviously a bright spot yesterday, you know, picked up a beautiful assist on the power play goal by, was it the Kyle Connor goal I'm thinking of, right? Yeah, story. There were a lot of goals scored in the last couple of Jets games. But, you know, Ehlers looked like he hadn't missed a game, let alone, you know, 19 games. But, you know, you look again at the power play time and, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers is just struggling to get a couple of minutes of power play time in a game in which, you know, the Jets had six power plays. So, I mean, what did you think of Nikolaj Ehlers' return? Obviously, you know, it would have been nicer if it happened a little bit earlier, but, you know, he just brought so much more speed and skill to a team that obviously could use all that they can get right now.
Yeah, as I definitely agree with, you know, a lot of your points. I don't necessarily disagree with any of them. I think there was some people, including in the press box, that were a bit up in arms because Nikolaj Ehlers wasn't getting the power play time that perhaps he deserves. I mean, I get that. I mean, I also get about riding your number one unit. You know what I mean? I you know, teams will do that. I mean, eventually at this, you know, the fact that the second unit scored on the last second of the sixth and final power play has a little bit of poetic justice to it to a certain degree. But I also realize that it's Nick Ehlers' first game. You know what I mean? It's his first game back after missing 19. It's a knee injury. You know, he's had injuries in the past, and I'm not defending the number one power play. They were brutal yesterday, and they were, you know, and they eat up time. And then, you know, there is a natural frustration. I think you got a little bit of that from Paul Stastny in his post game comments, mentioning, like, you know, he was mentioning, you know, hypothetically almost like, you know, you'd be kind of, you're stewing on the bench there, pissed off. Then you get on and, you know, quick puck movement, as Adam Lowry mentioned, and, you know, bingo, bango, the puck's in the back of the net. And I mean, and how great is that for that unit after, you know, what looked like a goal from Andrew Kopp, which clearly wasn't, then to you know, get back on the ice, you know, win that draw and then set up a goal there. I mean, that's huge for the Jets. But, you know, as far as Nikolaj Ehlers' game goes, I mean, yeah, certainly was great to see him back. He adds an element, as we all know, to that team: speed through the neutral zone, breakouts, all these things. He's one of the few game breakers on this team where he can kind of turn a game in a moment. So. But I also, you saw some of the rust. I mean, early on in the game, you know, he blew a tire and he kind of was complaining for a penalty. It didn't look like it was a penalty. I think he just fell. And then, you know,
unless you're giving a penalty to a ghost, I mean,
yeah, well, no, exactly. Like, I was trying to watch it. It just looked like it was, yeah. So, I mean, and then he blew another tire on what was an awkward drop pass from Neil Pionk that led to that goal. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those, you know, I mean, it certainly wasn't a bad game for Nikolaj Ehlers. You imagine it's only going to get better, but they need him in the lineup and they're going to need him down the stretch. And that's, you know, speaking to the trade deadline and particularly to Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments in that article, I mean, he does mention that Nikolaj Ehlers is kind of their deadline pickup, right? Like he is a big infusion into the lineup and he should pay dividends, but you know, that's not to say the Jets aren't going to get other injuries, but right now they're looking good. They're looking healthy and time to collect some points, guys. It's going to be a tough road here up ahead.
Jeff Hamilton, our guest Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel, live on all of our social media platforms. You know, Jeff, of course, as doing his work for the Winnipeg Free Press, covering the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, but Jeff, you know, going back to that idea of the trade deadline and what this team is going to do, and maybe not even, sorry, necessarily specific to the trade deadline, but team has decisions to make, and Kevin Cheveldayoff is somewhat famous on not really wanting to, you know, have to make any sort of radical moves. But the reality is you have a glut of young defensemen down on the Moose who are going to need a path somewhere. And the timelines don't work that guys will be leaving on contracts. You're going to have, you know, guys like, you know, Nate Schmidt still got a 4 years on the deal. Yeah. Brandon Dillon has years on his deal. Mm-hmm. But what that's done is it's created a logjam. So you've got players who are no longer going to be waiver exempt coming into the training camp next summer. So you're going to have to make some sort of decision, because the reality is if you try and finesse them through the waiver, there's a good chance that you'll lose some prospects. And so for nothing, obviously. And so that it becomes a function of what do you think Kevin Cheveldayoff and his crew are going to do? Because eventually you have to figure out a path forward, right? You have to find a space for a Ville Heinola. You have to find a space for a, you know, Dylan Sandberg, even the Declan Chisholms, the Leon Gavankes, the Johnny Kovaceviches. So there has to be some sort of plan. It just doesn't seem like it's that obvious. And then we understand how Kevin Cheveldayoff is. He doesn't really say much of anything. But what do you see happening in this regard? Because, I mean, they're going to have to start to do something. They're going to have their hand forced, because we know he doesn't necessarily like to, unless that's the case.
Yeah, and so it even speaks to the deadline. I mean, I don't think you're looking at moving a defenseman, you know, like a Dylan Schmidt, or sorry, a Nate Schmidt, or, you know, Brendan Dillon type thing. I just don't think the Jets are ready to acquire guys in the summer and then get rid of them by the spring kind of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not really a great look. I'm not saying that's impossible to happen. I still think that the management and group has bought into this club or this team for this season. So I don't see those guys leaving. Now, is the summer a completely different beast? Absolutely. I mean, and I think when they acquired, you know, Schmidt and Dillon, they felt like, okay, well, yeah, we have these prospects coming up, but if we're making a deep march into the playoffs, so what? You know what I mean? Like we're kind of on our path. Now that they've found themselves kind of, you know, clawing for a playoff spot and very likely to miss out on a playoff spot, I think that kind of puts the potential to blow everything up this summer and to really reevaluate, you know, what you want, you know, what, first of all, what the strategy is as far as building this team, and then what your options are to, you know, strengthen into what you think is the best, you know, group you have. And you know, whether that's like, I mean, look at a guy like Dylan Sandberg. I mean, I think he's ahead of Ville Heinola in the depth chart. And, you know, and people are really frustrated that Ville Heinola is not in the lineup. And I can certainly understand that. You need to, you know, because right now, I mean, you have the, you know, Morrissey, Pionk, Schmidt, and Dillon kind of locking up your top four. And even you have DeMelo, who's not, you know, he's not playing your bottom six right now. But if you were to just say skill-wise, you know, or even salary-wise, rather, you know, you have him kind of below. And then you have Logan Stanley. And, you know, let's face it, Nathan Beaulieu is probably not coming back next season, so he's out of the mix. So then, okay, there's one spot there for, say, a, you know, a Ville Heinola or a Dylan Sandberg. Even just that one opening creates a little bit more wiggle room with your prospects, right? I mean, you know, could guys like Johnny Kovacevic, you know, make that jump? Possibly. I don't think the Jets are ready to necessarily make him a regular top six, but if they are, or if they're looking to go like cap crunch here or invest in different areas of their roster, you have to start looking at bigger contract guys, or you look at the younger guys as pieces for trades. And I mean, how well of a job have you done on the Jets to sell a guy like Johnny Kovacevic or a Ville Heinola or a Dylan Sandberg? You haven't done much, right? Like, you know what you have in them, but if you're another team and they become one of the, you know, a prospect piece, well, it's like, okay, Ville Heinola has a little bit under his, you know, NHL, you know, resume, nothing crazy, but still there. But Dylan Sandberg has next to none. And same thing with Johnny Kovacevic. So, like, you're not really, like, what value do you get in those pieces? The value, essentially, is the veteran guys like a Schmidt, like a Dylan. And I'm not advocating trading those guys. They're just two pieces that have, you know, what do teams look for? What did the Jets covet when they signed them? Term and cost certainty. So, yeah. Like, you know, you're going to have somebody who know, you know, those guys have been in the league. They're appreciated by, you know, several teams and executives. They probably have the biggest allure. You know, you're not going to, you know, Dylan DeMelo, I would throw in that group as well. He's another potential trade bait. I mean, at this point, I mean, we can point to certain players on the team, but if you're looking at a, and I'm not saying the Jets don't need to do a full rebuild here, right? It'd be more of a retool, but that at the same time doesn't mean significant change can't happen or shouldn't come. So I think if you're Jets general manager, Kevin Sheveldayoff, and you're talking with your management group here and you're deciding the future of your team, you kind of need to determine some untouchables. You know, you need to determine some guys who you feel are like going to be your future down the road and then work from there. And that just, you know, that just, I mean, I know the question's on the defense here, but that doesn't leave other guys up, you know, up and forwards who have some pretty, you know, decent contracts and have been here for this amount of time, like a Blake Wheeler or a Mark Scheifele. And I'm not advocating trading Mark Scheifele. I'm just saying that if you get to a point where you don't think you're going to be able to keep Mark Scheifele, well, 2 years on a friendly contract like that, his value is probably not getting much higher as we move on here. So, I mean, this is all just a roundabout way of saying it's going to be a fascinating situation on how they evaluate, how they choose to move forward, because I don't know, besides maybe, you know, Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Connor Hellebuck, that you really have anyone that's untouchable on your roster. And a bunch of guys that I think other teams may be interested in. So, you know, to be a fly on the wall in Kevin Sheveldayoff's, you know, war room or whatever would be an interesting one at this point.
It certainly would be. Jeff Hamilton, our guest.
Jeff, Jeff, just remember, the sequels are never as good as the originals. So, you know, will it be the Summer of Chevy 2? It's kind of like Weekend at Bernie's 2. It wasn't quite as good as the original Weekend at Bernie's. So we'll have
he's not going to get the same amount of praise because everyone felt he filled the voids and, you know, and he got that. And then it was, you know, we see what we've seen.
Well, let's talk about that. Why hasn't it worked out then? Because you're right. You know, everybody talks about the Summer of Chevy and the Jets, you know, the number of prognosticators who said that the Jets were a Stanley Cup contender, if not, a, you know, predicted to be a Stanley Cup champion. You know, some significant people who are not, you know, Winnipeg homers were saying that. So why hasn't this mix worked out from your perspective, Jeff? And I mean, and sort of as an addendum to that question, you almost got Blake to speak honestly about Paul Maurice's leaving and the impact that had on the team before Blake stopped himself in that interview you did with him in Arizona. You know, do you, how much of an impact do you think Maurice's sudden departure had on this team and had on their fortunes from that point onwards this year?
Okay, so the first one, like, I'll be honest with you, and I'm not, there's by no means am I giving myself credit or anything about like this, but when everyone was celebrating the Summer of Chevy, essentially, as it was dubbed, you know, mm-hmm. it was kind of like, you know, they were important pieces. They were upgrades for the Jets. There's absolutely no doubt about it, but Nate Schmidt wasn't exactly, you know, awesome in Vancouver. He was coming off his worst season. He was just a guy that maybe you remembered from Vegas who had tons of speed, you know, would join the rush. I mean, he I'm not saying he hasn't done great things or that he's necessarily hasn't lived up to expectations here in Winnipeg, because I just maybe think the expectations were a little bit higher for him. And on top of it, like, I really like Brendan Dillon's game. I think he brings a nasty to, you know, to the Jets that, you know, was reminiscent of that 2018 run where it's just, you know, you need a little bit of, you know, grit, if you will. Move from people who don't necessarily love that term.
Truculence. Truculence.
Yeah, exactly. So lots of truculence on that theme too. I think that on the offensive side, I think the Jets have drafted the same guy. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have that power forward. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois is having a great season, so he is that new look power forward. They're just missing a few of those guys. They all kind of play the same game. I've also questioned for a very long time, because of the personnel that the Jets have, is, are they playing the right systems? Like, because every, like, you know, Paul Maurice wanted to grind these guys every game. They don't look like a roster that can play 82 games hard. You know what I mean? Like, grinding kind of style game. And Dave Lowry has essentially done the exact same thing. I'd almost add more to that whole, let's work our way out of this. And if you look at Dave Lowry's NHL career, I mean, he was a late draft pick. We all know that he played over 1,000 games. Well, he got out of funks by working harder. Well, that doesn't work for everybody. And I think if, you know, and I'm not necessarily saying his own career philosophy has necessarily moved into his coaching philosophy, but you see, and you see him asking for a lot out of the players that maybe they're just not built for. And if you want to play that style of game, get players that are built that way. And so that's kind of my answer to the first question and why I think that this thing, maybe this hasn't gone as well. There's also other factors. There's COVID, there's living in Canada, there's, you know, and I'm, you know, I love Canada, but, you know, these players, I'm just saying, these players are extremely frustrated to be living here under the COVID-19 rule. I don't agree with it. You know, if I had that much money in the bank account, COVID would be a distant thought for me.
You would be driving around in your Ferrari. You wouldn't care.
It's all relative. It's all relative to their experiences. So there's lots of things that are at play. But Drew, your second question about Paul Maurice, and I was super interested in getting that answer from Blake, and I think we will get that real answer. You know, at the year end, wherever this season goes. But I think that had a massive impact on this team. I mean, this is one of those. This is one of those situations where, you know, you had a guy who his best asset as a coach was his ability to reach players. And his best for his paycheck was his ability to reach Blake Wheeler and the leadership group here and staying in that position. And then he ultimately quit the team. There's no, like, I like Paul Maurice as a human being. I always appreciated it, you know, our back and forth, but there is absolutely no denying. And there might be other factors at play, personal ones here, things again that we might hear more about by season's end, but on the surface, as we see it, Paul Maurice quit on this team like he did. You don't go into war. You know, I don't like using war as a reference, but you don't go into battle with your team day in and day out and then just say at the end, boom, I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And, like, you know, at first I thought it was, okay, this is ridiculous. This is True North's way of not wanting to seem like a bad guy. You know, he didn't, you know, this is a firing, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. It's not. Like, it is not. I've dug and, you know, and tried to figure that out. And I can say with 100% certainty that it was a surprise on the Winnipeg Jets. So it must have been a surprise on the players. There's no way that Paul Maurice is having these chats with players being like, yeah, you know what, I'm not really feeling this, or I think a new voice is needed. So anyways, that threw a massive wrench into the locker room. I think guys are more sensitive than we, you know, give them credit for. They're human beings. I think they felt a real loss there. I think, and then you have to, you know, then you have to pick things up and then go to somebody else and have a new philosophy. And like, you're kind of getting over the, you know, the just kind of the breakup, and now you have to restructure and reevaluate. And then there's all these other things at play. So I just think that the Jets aren't as mentally strong a team to weather those kind of storms in other clubs. And I think that's been a massive, you know, piece of why they've been so inconsistent, why they haven't been able to push through this. And it's just, again, I'm looking forward to, I keep using the word fascinating because that's what this team is, if anything, is what exactly happened there, how it affected them. And, you know, more importantly, perhaps, is where are they going to go in the future? I mean, because is Dave Lowry going to be the guy that, you know, gets it done here? Like, there was no coaching bump for this team. So I don't know what that says. I don't know if it's, you know, moving other guys out, bigger voices, whatever, but I do think that that Paul Maurice, you know, essentially up and leaving threw a massive wrench in what was already an inconsistent season, one where the Jets were clawing for a playoff spot then, and they're clawing for a playoff spot now.
Yeah, I personally think, I've said this on the show, I think Dave Lowry is better suited as an NHL assistant or, you know, a head coach of a WHL team. But I personally think that, you know, the Jets should be looking at all, you know, possibilities is what I should say, Hammer, about, you know, who's going to be the next head coach, right? So wanted to ask you, go a little bit, you know, maybe on a tangent here, but wanted to ask you about Evgeny Svechnikov, because obviously Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny, all eyes are on those two guys, right? Last year, their contracts, will the Jets trade those two players or will they hang on to them? And, you know, they just go elsewhere in free agency. But, you know, Dave M, got to give him credit. You know, Svechnikov, when he was a healthy scratch and moved off of the line with Connor and Dubois, Dave was saying, like, get him back there. That's where he's been the most successful. Like, why aren't you reuniting those three? And then, you know, we saw it again, you know, last night on Connor's goal. I made a mistake earlier. Ehlers' pass was leading up to the Stastny goal on the power play, not Connor. Yeah, yeah. But that's okay. You guys know that I get my goals mixed up all the time. Svechnikov last year, he's going to a pending free agent as well. And the question I wanted to ask you, Jeff, is do you think his play this year has maybe, you know, given the Jets management, you know, a little bit pause for thought in terms of, you know, Christian Veselainen's future with this team, or maybe a Jansen Harkins future with this team? Obviously, these are younger players. I mean, Harkins, I think, is only 1 year younger than Svechnikov, but obviously Veselainen is 3 or 4 years younger than Svechnikov. But where do you see, you know, those kind of contracts going? Because I don't think anybody thinks, you know, Harkins is going to get a 7-year deal or anything like that, or Veselainen is going to get a long-term deal. But Svechnikov, to me, is a guy that I think if you're Chevy, you definitely have to be considering re-signing him to a couple of years. And you know, it's not going to break the bank. He's going to get a bit of a raise, but you know, what is he going to be around? $1 million, $1.5 million?
That's a great question.
Something like that. So I just wanted to ask you about where you kind of think, you know, those three players go, because I kind of feel like, you know, Veselainen is one of those players. It's kind of hard to read, you know, where his future is with this team. We just haven't seen enough consistency from him, I think, you know, to warrant anything more than a short-term deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all those three players have, you know, different yet similar stories this season, in the sense that, you know, you've seen things, you've seen some good things, you've seen some not so great things. I think Christian Veselainen is essentially playing himself off the team. I mean, he's a top 9 forward, and if you're not willing to be on that checking line, or you can't play responsibly on that checking line, you know, with Adam Lowry, you're clearly not a top 6 guy. I mean, at this point, I mean, you haven't shown glimpses. I mean, I know it's more difficult to do that when you're playing on the third or, you know, in fact, for him, fourth line a lot of the time. Like, but you need to show some flashes. I mean, that's what you do as a top 6 guy on a bottom 6 role. You you find, you know, you score those few opportunities that you have. You show some glimpses that you deserve an opportunity when someone gets injured. And I just haven't seen that with Vesalainen. So, you know, at this point, I don't know. Like, I mean, the Jets have given him an opportunity. They put him in position to flourish, if you will. They're just too rich on forward to really just, and I don't even want to say waste of time, because I'm not trying to say, you know, Christian Vesalainen could very well turn around and be a better player, but we just haven't really seen much of that. Jansen Harkins, I think, has a little bit of a longer leash just because the guy, you know, he goes hard, right? Like, you can see the effort in him. You can put him on the fourth line. He's not going to be super expensive. You can put him on the third line. So he has that versatility in the bottom six for sure. He's done a little bit in the top six when you've seen him with guys, you know, like when he's gotten a little bit of opportunity. So I think he's certainly earned his future in this, in this, on this team, whether that just be, you know, one or a couple year deals. And again, at the cheap, Svechnikov is a fascinating situation because, you know, he gets the opportunity to play with, you know, Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois early in the season because Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele get COVID. If that isn't happening, he ain't playing 11 games with that line. It's just not happening. So, you know, then he proves that he can do well with it. And then, you know, those guys come back and he's the odd man out. And what's interesting about him is that, you know, we have seen some really good games of his, right? We've seen him hit the score sheet. We've also seen some not so great games from him, some inconsistent games where he's, you know, kind of irrelevant. And I think the Jets, this is what is interesting. I think the Jets want to see more consistency from him. Well, I know they want to see more consistency from him. But it's just like, to me, the expectations you have on Evgeny Svechnikov versus the expectations you have on, say, Mark Scheifele or other guys that make just as many errors is just, it's almost comical. It's like, yeah, you got to beat up on the guy who's making next to nothing this season, who started with a professional tryout, who's been that piece of the puzzle on that line, that winger line that you've been trying to fill essentially all season long. You thought you had an answer with Cole Perfetti. Too small. He got hurt. That was, you know, I'm not going to say that was inevitable, but it's understandable. And then what do? You don't even go back to Evgeny Svechnikov. You bring a guy that you've had here for 48 hours and you plug him on that line and you play him like an idiot and he's gassed by the second period and Svechnikov needs to go back on that line for the third. And that being Winnipeg native Adam Brooks. Like it just made no sense to me that you're trying to find a solution. Seemingly, it looks like you have one staring, you know, at you in the face in Svechnikov, and then you're putting guys like Adam Brooks into play. It didn't make any sense. And so, like, clearly, and I, you know, I asked Dave Lowry outright in Dallas. I said, "What's the deal with Svechnikov? Is he in the doghouse or something? Like, what is the, you know, what is it about his play?" And, you know, he turned around, and that was, you know, conveniently for him, that was the morning skate that he was skating on a line with those, you know, that line. And he ultimately said, "Well, where is he right now?" And then his next comment was, "Take advantage of that opportunity." Well, Svechnikov has taken advantage of that opportunity ever since. And it's just one of those things where it just reminds you. And I think it, you know, good or bad, whatever, it validates a lot of, you know, people's opinions that he should have been with that line, you know, for, you know, as they were trying to figure things out and then stretch out some of that talent deeper into the lineup and not have Svechnikov living on your fourth line. You know what I mean? So, you know, he's a fascinating pick. You know, clearly there's a little bit of a lack of trust in his game, which we know is super important to head coaches. It's super important. And, you know, it's a big reason why Ville Heinola isn't in the lineup, is because although he's a skilled player, there's that lack of trust that he's going to make, you know, the right decisions at the right times and not the wrong decisions. And so it will be interesting to see his career, because I do think he enjoys playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois, who obviously he played with in junior. There's opportunity for him here. There's a little bit of history with him, right? With Detroit, things didn't go really well. He claims that he's matured. I know he's well-respected in the dressing room. He's one of the more outgoing guys in that locker room. And then when you see him in media for the last few months, as he's been kind of clawing his way up the lineup, he seems feels miserable. So who knows what his, you know, he's got to be feeling good now, but, you know, contracts are a two-way street. He's played himself into an NHL player. He's, you know, if it's not the Winnipeg Jets, it's not like somebody else won't sign him for, you know, low money. So he probably has options. I just think he's trying to figure out, and the Jets are trying to figure out if they can, you know, if he is a good piece for that spot. And if he is, I mean, wow. I mean, he might get, like you said, Az, or like you said, Drew, or like you said, Dave, I don't know which one, but you bump, you know, you get a bit of a bump in salary, But, you know, you fill a hole that you're not giving to a five-plus, six-plus million-dollar player the Jets so often do in their top six.
Now, Jeff, got to ask you about the curious case of Eric Comrie, because, you know, he's been very good for the Jets this season. His numbers are better than Connor Hellebuck's. And, you know, there's been some instances why it's understandable why he, you know, when he had COVID and that sort of thing, and when there were restrictions, why he wasn't getting into the lineup. But with the way that March plays out, do you think that Dave Lowry has to, and the way Connor Hellebuck really has looked, not Connor Hellebuckian, if you will, that they have to have a little more reliance on a guy who's shown that he's capable? I mean, he's already gotten you. We talked about it at the beginning of the season. You know, we said if Eric Comrie plays and he gets you, you know, 8 to 10 wins, then he's done what he needed to do. Because realistically, the way they run Hellebuck, you know, you thought you knew Comrie was probably only going to get to 12 to 15 games. But the reality is he's on pace to do what he needed to do as a backup. Don't you think the Jets, it's incumbent on them? I understand that these are must-win games, but it's not as if Connor Hellebuck has put them in a position to win all of these games the way we saw in 17-18.
You know, it's Connor Hellebuck is like, what, this year's Patrick Laine? Like, I just, like, this guy has done so much for this organization. And I'm not necessarily defending his play. There's certainly been games where, you know what I mean? Or like some weaker goals, even in Colorado, you know, in that comeback by the Avalanche. Like, Connor Hellebuck played great in the first period. In fact, the Jets had a 3-0 lead, but they had a 3-0 lead because Connor Hellebuck came up big in a lot of those plays. And then the Avalanche just kept playing the way the Avalanche were playing, and those goals were going in. Some were weaker than others. There have been weak goals. I'm not going to sit here and defend that Hellebuck is anything like his Vezina winning season. However, I think he's kept this team in a lot this season. You know, like you look at this, you know, you look at the way the Jets have played. You look at their position in the playoffs now, and it's not great. And it's certainly, you know, you can point in a lot of different directions, including the crease. But if Hellebuck hasn't played the way he has played, the Jets aren't even close. Like, and I think it was particularly earlier in the season. You know, like as his workload has gotten heavier here the last little bit, I think you can be a bit more judgmental in his play and certainly question why Eric Comrie hasn't gotten more opportunity to come in the crease or at least lighten that load. We all know Connor Hellebuck, you know, I always say it. I think he'd play 82 games. You know, I don't think he physically could play 82 games, but I think he would if given the opportunity. And so, you know, he wants to get in the crease. You know, he has a certain rhythm. Goalies are weird, man. We all know that. Like they have a certain thing they need. So like, you don't really want to, you know, mess with his psyche either. If he's ready to go and he's feeling capable and wait, you know, Wade Flaherty's seen him move well, because they're very in tune with their goalies too. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just like, okay, 37, like you're in, you know, like, of course you're in. There's a lot of talk that goes into it, but the reality is that, you know, you need, like earlier in the season, in some of those losses, a lot of those losses, Connor Hellebuck was your best player. And so, you know, again, I'm not making a defense for saying that, you know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, shouldn't get or should get less time, yada, yada. I feel like it's a little bit of like a Blue Bomber situation where the backup quarterback's like the most popular guy when the goal, when the starter isn't shining. But I mean, I think you looked at Eric Comrie, because Eric Comrie is on a tryout every single time he takes the crease. Like this is his first real backup job. And so, you know, as much good as we've seen from him, and he's, you know, strung together, you know, what is it, 4 wins in a row or whatever it is right now, you know, he's done his job. Does he need to do a greater job, like in the sense of like more games and whatever? Maybe. But I think at this point, it's just when I'm pointing at things on this team, I just don't look towards Connor Hellebuck. Clearly he needs to be better. You know, whether that is lightening his load, I think they need to, you know, I always was curious, and I'd never bring in, like, I know the kid thing's a very sensitive topic, but you guys, I don't know, you guys are all, or, you know, you guys, some of you have kids or whatever, like it's as tough. It's tough to, you know, like it's a new thing in life. So I'm wondering, like, I've wanted to talk to Connor Hellebuck. I've asked for the Jets to talk to Connor Hellebuck, and no, he's not talking to me, for anyone who would take the letter. I wanted to talk to him about like his family life, you know what I mean? And how becoming a father has kind of changed things. And so anyways, certainly not blaming his child or him being a father on his say play, but he's got a lot going on. He's got a lot of pressure on him. We've seen these things where it's been, you know, some weaker goals, whether it's through the 5-hole, whether it's, you know, his, you know, the glove, you know, gloves, high glove is like his thing, right? I mean, that's been his thing since he played for the Moose. And so, you know, but at the same time, I mean, if you're pointing at guys that are not getting the job done, I'd be kind of pointing a few different directions before I'd be looking at the crease.
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Hammer, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll let you get on with your weekend. Always appreciate your time and your insight. Great job this morning.
Thanks for having me on, guys, and shout out to the comment section. They're the ones that run this show.
100% the case, Jeff. You absolutely know.
Gotta be nice to them.
Yeah, Hammer, that's our board of directors, the people in the chat. It's the IC board of directors.
Totally. Absolutely. All right,
they're
guys.
The linchpin.
Thanks, Hammer.
Thanks, Jeff. There he goes, Jeff Hamilton, joining us this morning. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Jets. Talk about the Jets and the Rangers ahead of tomorrow's game here in Winnipeg. Preview Tuesday against the Lightning, and our good friend Marty B. Ron joining us at the bottom of the hour. We also have a Manuk Moose Minute still to come. Don't go anywhere. It's a busy Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go.
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
10:15 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. A reminder, the post-game show after the Jets and the Rangers tomorrow night, right around 8:45 p.m. It's a 6 o'clock puck drop, which makes for an 8:45 p.m. or so post-game show. Come back here to our YouTube channel. I'll be here. Dave will be here. Ezzy will be here. Hopefully you'll all be here as well. And while you're at it, hopefully your friends and family will be here. Tell them that the best place to be after each and every Winnipeg Jets game, and again on Saturday mornings, is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel for your latest and greatest analysis about every Winnipeg Jets contest.
Tomorrow Jets night, boys, so I was going to say, tomorrow night should be like bring your family member to the postgame show.
That's, yeah, a good idea. That's a good idea.
And then you let us know like what family member is watching.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, C-Mac or, you know, Rob Somerville, Kay's Water Bottle, you know, the regulars, Rob Mahoney, Charles Shaw, like,
bring it. Are you trying to turn this into a Ponzi scheme?
It's a pyramid scheme. It's the Illegal Curve into a family affair.
Drew was saying that he was encouraging, you know, people to bring their family members. So let us know. Yeah, it's like show and tell. Like, who's your family member that you want to show and tell us about?
I asked my family if they'd come to the post game show. They looked at me and said, "Get out of the house." I mean, I thought that was very considerate of them. What's that?
They said, "Go in the basement."
Yeah, just go in the basement and stay there. Exactly right. In any event, yes, it's friends and family night.
Mommy, why is Drew in the electrical closet again?
My kids just think that this is where I go to cry, I think. And I'm pretty sure that's what they expect is happening down here.
I definitely have a designated crying room as well. It's okay, Drew. Speaking of parents, I mean, that's what we do. You do, right?
Oh, C-Mac, C-Mac said, and I'll put it up on the thing. His wife was watching last night. She liked you the best.
Well, C-Mac's wife has some good taste.
I mean, I would say that I'm surprised by that, but I'm not.
Oh, shots fired by Mr. Ginsburg. We'll have to, Dave and I will have to discuss how we're going to handle that.
A package deal. Come on. There's no I in a legal curve.
Joe's wife watches it and she laughs. Wait.
There's no Y in a legal curve. I'm pretty sure there is. But that's
actually, Drew, if you would have done today's Wordle, you would have understood that.
I did today's Wordle. I got it quite easily, in fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
The other day, I didn't get it, and it was like a pretty easy word, and I didn't feel very smart.
Are people still doing that? I thought it's no longer cool to do that on the internet.
Well, there's also Knuckle, which is the Canadian version of Wordle.
I'm a traditionalist. Group? You know, Dave, I don't tweet about it nearly as often as I used to. I still do it.
You sure seem to be tweeting about it.
I was just going
to
say, I'm pretty sure 3 or 4 days ago you posted it. So I don't know.
That's a little. I think you're just not posting as frequently when you don't do as well.
I have a very solid winning streak going on. I have a solid winning streak going on. I don't tweet about it as often, but I enjoy doing it with my breakfast, with my morning cereal. It's the kind of thing that, for whatever reason, it gets my day started off on the right foot.
You like doing it with your shredded wheat, right, Drew?
No, I'm more of a multigrain Cheerios kind of guy, not a shredded wheat kind of guy, but I appreciate the option nonetheless.
My kids are huge into corn pops these days.
Corn pops. Get those kids some nice sugary cereals. Yeah, exactly. Like when daddy used to buy his Kraft dinner and his apples from a local convenience store.
Oh, I give my kids so much sugar. They eat, like, it's ridiculous. Like, I apparently too much sugar is not very good, but I mean, you could have fooled me.
You know that if they have less sugar, they are less likely to bounce off the walls. I don't know if you know that there's a correlation there. You might want to look into that.
The other day I was thinking maybe I shouldn't be giving my kids each a bowl of sugar, but I mean, and a straw just to suck it up. But
kids, tonight for dinner, Pixie Sticks. And for lunch, what was the stuff you dipped the fun dip?
Fun Pops. Fun Pops. Fun dip, that's right.
Yeah, fun dip, exactly. The Ginsburg family diet plan is going very
Life
well.
Life is a bowl of Skittles, Drew.
Interesting note, goals saved above expectation ahead of tomorrow night's game against the New York Rangers. Hellebuck is not in the top 10, apparently.
Shesterkin's number one.
Shesterkin is number one at 38.6. The next closest is Frederick Anderson at 30. So, you know, if it is Shesterkin tomorrow for the Winnipeg Jets, it's a difficult challenge because he's been keeping the Rangers, to your point about Larry Brooks. And, you know, Larry Brooks is certainly somebody you should watch or read for the latest about the New York Rangers. He's covered the team, well, forever. But he has been very vocal that it's Shesterkin as of late who's keeping the Rangers in a good standing. And tomorrow's game against the Rangers is certainly going to be a difficult test for the Jets, but they need to steal some games. That's where the Jets are at this point in the season. They need to steal some games against some teams that are quote-unquote better than they are, and the Rangers would certainly qualify as one of those teams, the Rangers coming into tomorrow's game with a 35 15-5 record, good for third place in the Metropolitan Division, within striking distance of the Penguins in second. That'll be a great first round series if it comes to fruition. But the Jets need to steal games. They need to steal from the Rangers. They need to steal from the Lightning, who come in on Tuesday, because 500, as we've talked about, just isn't good enough. And it'll start tomorrow, where the Jets need to play with that attention to detail that has so far this year been missing at so many different times.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Rangers have been, you know, I hate to use the word struggling, because I think it's one of the most overused words in sports. I think you guys would agree with that. But, you know, they were shut out by the Penguins 1-0 last weekend. Then they lost their next game. I believe it was to the Canucks. And then they ended up, you know, bouncing back. And we talked about they've won their last two games. They beat the Devils 3-1 last night. But, you know, I have to ask Marty Biron, or one of us is going to have to ask Marty about Igor Shesterkin, because, of course, you know, Marty Biron ended his career last 4 years with the Rangers and played with a pretty good goalie by the name of Henrik Lundqvist, right, who's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I think we'd all agree with that. So Igor Shesterkin, obviously, I mean, it's way too early to start talking about the Hall of Fame, but this guy, I mean, I think it's comparable to a couple of years ago with Hellebuck when he won the Vezina, guys. Like, he was far and above. I mean, we talked about it the year before, right, when he was a finalist and Pekka Rinne won, Dave. Like, okay, yeah, Rinne and Hellebuck, it was a little bit closer. But the next year was not close. Like, that was an easy pick for Hellebuck as Vezina, right? And I think it's kind of a similar thing to this year. Like, yes, Freddie Anderson's having a great year. You know, UC Saros is having a great year. There's some other goalies that are having really good years. You know, Bobrovsky's another guy that I mentioned. But, you know, I think it's hands down. But the offense has dried up a little bit for the Rangers. Like, Chris Kreider's having an unbelievable year, a career year. With what is he at, 34 goals now? Like, Mika Zibanejad, 36 goals. There you go. So, yeah. I mean, he's talking about guys who are going to score 40 goals. I mean, he's easily going to hit 40. But, you know, this Rangers team, I think, needs this win, you know, just as much as the Jets in terms of, you know, how the other teams in that division have caught up, right? Like, the Rangers had a little bit more of a cushion. But, you know, that Metro division is, you know, airtight, guys. Like, nobody's really running away with that division. And this is the first game of a road trip. So you're absolutely right. You know, it's going to be a big test for the Jets. But, you know, if they do want to be, if they're serious about making the playoffs, these are the types of games that you have to win.
It might be an audition for Andrew Copp, because we've heard, of course, about the ties and the potential connections between the Copp, the Rangers being interested in Andrew Copp. So maybe, you know, it's a bit of a showcase for him tomorrow night against the Rangers. Not that the Rangers don't already know what they need to know about a guy like Andrew Copp, if they are indeed interested in him. Dave, are you surprised the Jets canceled practice today? You know, this is a team that, you know, didn't practice on Thursday. They took Thursday off after, you know, they won on Tuesday. And I think they took, right, was it Thursday off? They took Wednesday off.
I think they took Wednesday off, wasn't it?
Wednesday off, sorry. And then today there was a practice scheduled that they decided to scrap as well. And I know that it's, you know, Friday, you know, Sunday game. So that's, you know, it certainly got a little bit of a busy portion of the schedule. I was a little surprised to see after the game last night that they elected to cancel practice today and make it a complete day off for the players.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think it's interesting because I'm reflecting on what Dave Lowry said about the schedule and how it's going to accelerate and how they're going to have a game almost every second day. And I think if I recall correctly, he made a comment, like, even though they had days allocated for practice, I remember him saying something like they've only got about four practices between now and, you know, sometime in April or something like that. So it is possible that even though they've had these days on the schedule, because they have to have a schedule, you know, available for people, I think that it's not a huge surprise that they're trying to get guys. I mean, guys look a little gassed, right? So I think that's part of it. I think you need to, it's a cost benefit analysis, and you have to decide if the cost is worth getting them on the ice. I mean, we laugh and say, look, it's an hour out of your day. You can rest and recover, you know, the remaining, 12, 13 hours that you're awake and resting and recovering. But for whatever reason, they want to keep these guys off the ice and keep their legs fresh. You know, especially when you have guys like Neil Pionk, who isn't obviously 100%, and Nate Beaulieu, who went down with injury. The Moose are going to play today, so I guess they're going to let the Moose have their game and then make a decision accordingly in terms of who they're going to recall. Because, I mean, look, we don't know the extent of what Nate Beaulieu is dealing with, but it didn't look good the way he couldn't put any weight on his...
Dave, get the Ville Heinola has been called up by the Moose Post ready for the website.
Well, no. Well, I mean, I think what you're going to see is you'll probably see that after. Either you'll see that tomorrow morning, more likely.
No, you'll see it tomorrow morning.
You'll see Hamill up. Yeah,
it's a money thing, also, right?
Well, so also, the salary cap. You're right.
You'll wait till tomorrow, and you'll put Beaulieu on whatever, and then if they need to, and then you'll call Ville Heinola, because I mean, you know, folks have to understand Dylan Sandberg's only played like one game in his return to the lineup, so he's, I mean, as much as he was looked good when he was playing for the Jets, you know, he has missed a significant amount of time. Ville Heinola has been playing, so I think you're going to see Ville Heinola called up. And, you know, if you're the Jets, I mean, I don't know, like, what have we been talking about? The Jets haven't been scoring. I mean, they've been scoring more of late, of course, so I qualify what I'm saying. But, you know, a lot of what they need to do is control the puck. There's too many instances where we see this team, and what does Ville Heinola do well? Makes a very good first pass. Controls the puck pretty well. So you can say he's not big enough, he's not strong enough. Fine. Like, he's not as big as Logan Stanley. He's not as strong as Logan Stanley, but he makes a much better first pass. He controls the puck a lot better than Logan Stanley. So, you know, is there a desire maybe to get him in and pair him? He looked good with Nate Schmidt too. So, I mean, and I'm not saying that Stanley couldn't be good with Schmidt. I'm saying if you put him in, fine. But, and I suspect Dave Lowry's the coach, that's what he'll do, is he'll go with Logan Stanley. But I just think, like, you need to, if you're going to call Ville Heinola up for no reason, I always worry about that, because I just think it's a wasted effort and it's a waste of time for a prospect. But I think that becomes that's more to the point of the ramifications of dealing with a logjam of guys and not having space to put all of these prospects into the lineup. And for, you know, the good news with the Jets prospects, some of them at least, is Jets won't have that luxury next year, right? You're going to have to figure out who you want where. You can't have an Beaulieu blocking, because do you want to lose Johnny Kovacevic for nothing because you're protecting Nate Beaulieu? Doesn't really make a lot of sense. No. So the Jets won't have the luxury of waiver exemption for some players next year, and as a result, their hand is going to be forced.
Would you make any changes to the forward group for tomorrow? Not changes in terms of the 12 that the Jets dress so much, but with Ehlers now having a game under his belt, would you move him away from Kopp and Lowry and maybe swap Stasny and Ehlers, give Ehlers more of that playing time with Scheifele and Wheeler? Or do you expect Dave Lowry to sort of continue, to keep the at least the top three lines the same as he did in last night's game against Dallas? The success that they had would be, I'd say, at best. So what would you think? Do you think that you could see a swap of wingers for tomorrow night?
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable, right? Like, if it isn't tomorrow night versus the Rangers, Drew, it's going to be Tuesday night versus Tampa Bay. Nikolaj Ehlers is not a third-line player, just simply put, right? So, yeah, you could see it. But, I mean, again, like, Stastny was really good last night, and that line has been together. And, you know, they've had, obviously, as you mentioned, varying degrees of success, right? Like, Connor Dubois, Svechnikov, I don't see that line being tinkered with. So, yeah, it would probably be the Ehlers for Stastny swap there. But it's hard to say if it would be tomorrow just based on how yesterday's game went. Like, we talked about it, like, the Jets controlled the play against Dallas in the second and third periods. First period, not so much. And obviously, you know, Nick Ehlers had a really strong first game back after missing 6 or 7 weeks, right? So don't have the answer to that. I would probably, my best guess is what I said before. I imagine that, you know, the lines would probably stay the same. And then maybe you see that against Tampa, get, you know, Ehlers one more game on that third line, but that's just a total guess. I wouldn't be surprised if Ehlers starts the game with Scheifele, or, you know, in game Lowry moves Ehlers up to that top line, Drew. So I realize that's a bit of a cop-out answer.
No, it's fair.
But,
it's
you know, he's only been back for one game. So, you know, maybe, you know, Lowry would like to just see him one more, you know, and it obviously adds an offensive flair to that third line with Lowry and Kopp, right? So it'll be interesting to see, but, I mean, it's just nice to see the Jets healthy again, right? Like, it seemed like Ehlers was out forever, and, you know, Kopp missed some time as well. So
there's certainly a more entertaining team when Nikolaj Ehlers is on the ice, because, you know, he's one of the few guys on the Jets who, you know, you sort of get to the edge of your seat every time he comes onto the ice.
One zone entry, right?
That's right, exactly. Mr. Zone Entry himself. Let's continue on with our great group of guests. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Marty Biron joins us on the show now. Marty, happy Saturday to you. How are things doing with you?
Things are pretty good. I mean, the Sabres beat the Leafs the other night, and then they went on to beat the Minnesota Wild last night. So I'm feeling like, I mean, we're not going to make the playoffs as Sabres organization, but there's been some bright spots, and feeling good there on Saturday morning.
You know, Marty, those are two, you know, you know, those are two big wins for a Buffalo organization that's like searching for things and positive signs. You know, that the Leafs game in particular was particularly impressive to me. The Wild are struggling right now, but the Leafs, you know, people probably thought they would just roll over the Sabres. What did the Sabres do so well in that victory against Toronto earlier this week?
Well, and it was the same thing against the Wild yesterday. The Wild are a heavier team a little bit. They forecheck and they crash the net a little bit more. So they scored dirty goals, like long-range goals against Buffalo, and that's the way they did. But against the Leafs, what the Buffalo Sabres did, they just protected the middle of the ice. It was very simple. Like, the Leafs could never get to the slot, could never get to the middle of the ice on rush entries. And that did frustrate the Toronto Maple Leafs. I did not really see Nylander much. I did not see Tavares much. I did not see, you know, I saw Marner a couple of chances in the first period. That went away. So it was not a good game for the Leafs, obviously. And defensively, they struggled. I know everybody's talking about goaltending in Toronto and Jack Campbell and Peter Mrazek and what are the Leafs going to do? Well, the Leafs can't do anything. They're stuck. I mean, are they going to, you know, are they going to trade some salaries to try to fit in a new goaltender? I don't think it's the right approach. Their defense was brutal against the Buffalo Sabres, and I think they're looking to change that. Sandin was with Riley. That did not work. And Morgan Riley, to be honest with you, did not have a good game either. He was on the attack and offense more often. I saw him more on the forecheck than I saw him in his defensive zone. So, look, the Leafs are a great team. They're having some issues right now, but they're a great team. I think they'll figure it out, but it was good that the Sabres beat them 5-1, and the Heritage Classic is coming up in you know, a week and a half, actually a week from tomorrow. So, yeah, so maybe a nice rematch. That makes a nice story for the game.
Absolutely. And, yeah, go ahead, Drew.
I was going to say, it certainly adds a little bit of juice to that Heritage Classic. Marty, we always love having you on, talking about everything going around the league, and especially goaltending. Tomorrow, the Jets are going to play the New York Rangers, and we don't yet know who's in goal for the Rangers tomorrow. But we have to ask about Igor Shesterkin. I mean, his numbers are absolutely through the roof this season. He's been the backstop, you know, that the Rangers have needed and have had for so many, you know, he's just a natural successor to Henrik Lundqvist. When you watch Shesterkin, what are you seeing in his game that makes him so effective and makes him the Vezina Trophy, certainly leader at this point in time, and really should be in the discussion for the Hart Trophy?
It'd be a lot easier to say, what do I not see in his game? And I would say pretty much nothing. What do I see in his game? Quickness. He's extremely quick in his lateral movement. Never seems to get himself fallen behind the play or get beat on plays and lateral plays. Flexibility, hip release. You know, it's not just about doing the splits, but it's about being able to turn your body and have your hips face the right direction when you're trying to make saves. And Igor Shesterkin is just like Andrei Vasilevsky, and to a certain extent, a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky. They're incredible at it. And that puts him always square to the shooter. And then the rebound control comes in with that, because if you're sideways and the puck hits you, you don't know where the rebound goes. But if your hips are square and you turn your body and you have all that mobility, especially in your core, it's a lot easier to control your rebound. He's got a great glove. He's got a great attitude. He always seems to be enjoying playing the games. He wants the pressure. He wants to bring it in. Like, without Igor Shesterkin, the Rangers would struggle to even be, in my opinion, in a playoff spot right now. So I have to think that Shesterkin is my favorite right now for MVP this season. Now, I'm being careful when I say that, because a month ago I was thinking, well, UC Soros with Nashville would probably be considered as an MVP and maybe a Vezina Trophy winner. And then they took a nosedive, and it has been a struggle in Nashville. So I don't want to jinx Shesterkin and the Rangers. I know I'm wearing my Flyers alumni pullover right now, but I do have some Rangers swag in my closet too. So I want to make sure that they keep performing the way that they have. But Shesterkin has been just amazing to watch.
Marty, I have another question, but just on that topic of, and you know better than anybody, you know, about Igor Shesterkin being an MVP candidate. But do you think, you know, I mean, we all know that, you know, it's rare for a goalie to win the MVPs unless your name is Jose Theodore or if it's, you know, Dominic Hasek. But should he really be, do you think he's going to be given more serious consideration for the Hart Trophy this year? Because we all know who else is in the conversation, like whether you don't want to throw out like a Johnny Gaudreau or, you know, whether you want to throw out a Connor McDavid. I mean, I think you could probably make an argument Chris Kreider might even be in the Hart Trophy conversation this year with 36 goals. But do you think he will be given legitimate consideration? Because you saw Larry Brooks today in his column basically saying the same thing. Like, Shesterkin is the reason why the Rangers are where they are in the standings.
I think he's appealing to both the analytical and the eye testing crowd out there. Shesterkin, his numbers are off the charts when you look at goals save above expectations, high danger chances that he faces, and all of it. So I think the analytical crowd will love Shesterkin, and they do already. The eye test, well, you know what? Just look at, I saw Steve Valiquette put a tweet this morning. He says, I'm going to put together a top five glove save of Igor Shesterkin just because, I mean, he has been spectacular. It hasn't been just one big glove save like Marc-Andre Fleury used to do the windmill. It's been multiple glove saves with Igor Shesterkin and just incredible athleticism in the net. So I think all crowds are loving Shesterkin. I think the competition right now may be coming from, again, a Connor McDavid, depending on what the Edmonton Oilers do for the next 20-some games. Auston Matthews, will he be scoring a lot of goals? But if there's really one, and I know Dominic Hasek won MVPs, back-to-back MVPs, that is, in the 90s. And the Sabres were not a really good team, but they had a all-world goaltender. I think this is the situation that the Rangers are finding themselves in. Not that they don't have a good team. They have a great team. But without Shesterkin, they would just be a good team that can't win. And I think that's why you would put Shesterkin at the top of the list right now. Theodore won the MVP, but it was a tie. And, you know, I don't know. He tied for the Vezina that year as well, and he won the Vezina and the Hart. Carey Price was the type of player that, you know, would be considered an MVP and did. I think Shesterkin is at that level.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury, and, you know, you've been generous and come on the show many times, and we've asked you about Marc-Andre Fleury so many times. And I think, you know, you would agree it was unfortunate how it ended in Vegas. And I think you could make a strong argument that the Golden Knights really miss having, you know, Fleury. And, you know, obviously, you know, you don't have a crystal ball, but with the trade deadline coming up in just over a couple of weeks, like, do you think there's a good chance Marc-Andre Fleury is moved? And is there a team, like we talked about the Leafs, I agree with you. I don't think the Leafs are a team that would be in on Marc-Andre Fleury. A lot of people have talked about Edmonton. He is in the last year of his deal, so we should mention that, but there might be some money retained. I mean, obviously, you know, management would have to figure that out. But is there a team out there, Marty, that you think, like, you know, if you bring in a veteran like Marc-Andre Fleury, he would really just make that goaltending much better, and that would really kind of push a team over the top going into the playoffs?
Well, I don't know if it would push them over the top, but I look at the Washington Capitals, and I think, you know, their front office just spoke to the media a couple of days ago and basically said, you know what, we've looked around, we've called around. I don't think it's in the cards. We have the team that we have right now, and we're going to have to plug along with it. I think it's Vitek Vanacek's now. Is not now. He's healthy, and I don't think that's Samsonov. I really don't think Samsonov is the answer in Washington. So I thought the Washington Capitals may be a good fit for Marc-Andre Fleury, but I'll tell you this, from all the information I'm gathering right now, I would be very surprised if Marc-Andre Fleury gets traded either at or before the deadline. I think he's going to finish the season in Chicago and then reevaluate where he wants to do next year. But I would think it's very unlikely that he moves. So now what does that do? That leaves maybe St. Louis in a position where they may be looking to trade Ville Husso or Jordan Binnington. Again, all my information tells me that I don't think they're going to do it at the deadline. I think they're going to keep both Husso and Binnington and make a decision after the season or right before the draft, before Husso would be to hit free agency. So there is goalies available around the NHL. Are they upgrades over what Edmonton has right now, what Washington has right now, you know, what Vegas has right now? Because I think Vegas may be kicking tires on something. No, they're really not. So I think teams are basically stuck with what they have. They needed to do pull the trigger maybe a month or a month and a half ago. And I'm talking mostly about Edmonton. I think they needed to make the move a month ago. Now it's going to be hard to do.
Marty Biron is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. You know Marty from the great work he does with our friends at MSG and, of course, TSN.
No, Marty, you mentioned in your first answer briefly to Drew, and it's been 4 years since the Sabres have played in an outdoor game. That was a Winter Classic. Now they're going to get a chance to play in the Heritage Classic. You know, there hasn't been a lot of excitement in Buffalo. So is the fan base a little bit galvanized about this game? Is it kind of creating a little bit of excitement? And for a second part of that question is, what was it like for you putting the C on your jersey in that regard?
I always felt like I was a captain whenever I played. They just never wanted to give it to me. Neither they could because I have to say this first. I don't think goalies should ever be captains. And you saw what happened with Roberto Luongo in Vancouver. I think that's a lot. I think you already have a lot on your shoulders, and it's a different pressure than being a player. So, but I enjoyed it. I was with Wendell Clark in Hamilton the other day, and we welcomed the ice making truck in. There was people from the NHL. There was media there. We had fun. And yeah, Wendell doesn't have a C on his jersey, although he was a captain in the NHL. And I'm walking around all proud with my C on my jersey. And it was great. And oh, first of all, that Sabres jersey, wow, it looks so good. Yeah, it is. The blue and the gold just pops on that cream-colored base. It's going to be really fun. That stadium, that Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton is spectacular. I got to meet up with Simone Lawrence, and he was awesome, stud linebacker with the Ticats. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I think fans in Buffalo are excited now. You know, although the borders is opening, and you know it's a lot easier to go back and forth than it was even 2 months ago. It's still a little bit complicated, but I'll tell you this: I got so many messages about 3 weeks ago on Twitter. Marty, do you know if there is going to be a Heritage Classic? Do we know if it's going to be? When are their jerseys being, revealed to the crowd? Like, it was a big question mark, even if there was going to be a game. And I think fans in Buffalo are excited about it, at least to see that rivalry, Toronto-Buffalo, and to have a nice featured game on TNT in the U.S. and obviously CBC SportsCenter in Canada. So it's going to be really cool.
Marty, you look at the sort of the top teams in the league right now, and most of them have what I would say are question marks in goal, or they have got goaltenders who are playing well, but have never really done it come playoff time. You know, Colorado, Darcy Kemper, good goalie, hasn't had a playoff track record to speak of. Freddie Anderson in Carolina, well, we know about his playoff track record in in Toronto. You know, Bobrovsky in Florida, he's been struggling as of late. Spencer Knight is sort of behind him waiting in the wings, but he's 20 years old. Pittsburgh, you got Tristan Jarry, you know, again, never really done it, taking the team on a significant run. Are we all overlooking Tampa and Vasilevsky and the possibility of a three-peat there this season?
Very much so. I think if you look at the last 2-3 weeks, the way Tampa has played, they had a stinker a couple of nights ago, and then they respond with a big game against Detroit last night. And to a man in Tampa, they know how to win. And it starts with obviously Julien Brisebois, John Cooper, everybody else in that staff. But if you have guys like Stamkos now and Kucherov and Point and Hedman, and you can name the whole team, you know, early in the season, you're like, well, they're really missing Barclay Goodrow, Blake Coleman, and Yanni Gourde. Well, not so much anymore. They found themselves a third line. They found themselves a different dynamic that works now for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they do have Vasilevsky. So I think they are the favorite in my book. You even talk about, Calgary. Calgary's doing great. Is Jacob Markstrom the guy that you feel really confident? He's had a fantastic season. I was never a big fan of Markstrom in the past. This year, I love him. I love his competitiveness. I love his quickness. I love his edge a little bit. But you see the other night when Montreal went into Calgary and Brendan Gallagher got into Markstrom's face and Markstrom kind of started losing it a little bit, cross-checking him and punching him and getting on top of him. Well, Montreal was able to get into Markstrom's kitchen. How does that happen in a 7-game series for Calgary if your goalie kind of, you know, has that edge that you can't control? And that's why I say the calmer the goalies, the better it is. And Vasilevsky definitely has that. I would put him as number one right now.
Marty, wanted to ask you about Jack Eichel, because it seemed like we had you on a bunch of times and we were talking about, is Eichel going to be traded? And obviously he was traded back in November, which seems like 3 years ago. And Eichel's only been back for, a week or so, 2 weeks. I think he's played something like 5 or 6 games, just checked, 8 games. But I wanted to ask you what your opinion of that trade is now, because obviously we're not going to ask you who won the trade because there's draft picks involved and it's only been, 4 or 5 months. But, Alex Tuch, even though, he's slowed down a little bit, he's close to a point a game player. Peyton Krebs, I think you'd agree, has looked pretty good in a Sabres uniform. He's only 21 years old. And then we talked about, you've got, the first rounder, and then I believe it's a second or third rounder. So what have you thought of the fit with Alex Tuch in Buffalo? Because it seems like, he's already become a fan favorite.
Well, Alex Tuch is from nearby Syracuse, New York. It's a couple of hours away. He grew up a Sabres fan. Actually, his parents' neighbors were Tim Connolly's parents, and they still live next to one another. So Tim Connolly obviously played in Buffalo for many years. So Alex was really excited to be here in Buffalo. Obviously, it's not easy leaving Vegas because you have been a competitive market in the NHL, and you think about the Stanley Cup. But if there was a place I think that he was looking forward to maybe one day put on a jersey was Buffalo, and he's made a mark right away, not just on the ice, but off the ice and in the locker room with that team. So that was a big win for Kevin Adams and the Buffalo Sabres to be able to get Alex Tuch. And I think Peyton Krebs is going to be a stud. I think what we've seen out of Peyton Krebs right now at the center position, because he played a little bit of wing, and then they put him at center the last couple of games here. He's between Asplund and Olofsson, and both Asplund and Olofsson have had a tough year. And all of a sudden, yesterday in the game against Minnesota, that's your best line. It's Krebs, Asplund, Olofsson. That's your best line. It's not Thompson, Tuch, Skinner, even though Skinner got 2 goals, to make it 3-3 and 4-3, but it was Krebs that was leading the way. Krebs on the power play, that's got the great vision and is loving to control and to slow things down. And obviously, you guys in Winnipeg have had a chance to see Peyton Krebs play juniors, but he's just getting better and better and better. And Don Granato has given him more opportunities to showcase what he's got. So do I think Krebs is going to be here in Buffalo for the rest of the season? Probably not, because at some point it probably would be good for him, for Jack Quinn, for JJ Peterka, for all of these youngsters to go back to Rochester and have that playoff push and that playoff experience. But I think you keep him up as long as you can, because he's definitely making a difference in the way the Sabres are playing. So, yeah, winning the trade, I mean, whatever. It's not about that. Ryan O'Reilly got traded to St. Louis years ago, and he wins the MVP and the Cup and all of that. And people are looking at Buffalo. They got Berglund and Sobotka, and they're like, well, that was a terrible trade. Well, look at how Tage Thompson is going now. And maybe sometimes a change, not just in the locker room, but within your team, it takes time to develop. And so I think the Sabres are feeling pretty good at where they are at with Tage Thompson, Peyton Krebs, Alex Tuch, and more deals that are going to be coming up here at the deadline.
Marty Biron is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
You know, Marty, my question was going to be about goaltenders playing too much. But, when 20 years ago, you played 72 games for the Sabres. So I'm not.
Which was too much.
I'm not so certain as you're the guy to ask, because, I was looking. You played 72. You played 65. You played 55. You played a lot of games, in season for your teams. But for Connor Hellebuck, and it just seems like, and he can't score. Jets are 20th in the NHL in scoring. So goal scoring is something a goaltender can't do. And if your team isn't scoring, it's hard to win games. But have you seen anything in his game that looks like he's just doesn't have that same Connor Hellebuck, je ne sais quoi that we're used to seeing year in and year out?
Is fatigue factoring in?
I don't know if fatigue is factoring in, because I think Connor is a guy that takes care of himself and can handle it. And he's been playing a lot of hockey for many years now. I mean, I think as he has a good rhythm. Yes, you would want your goalie, I think, to play 55 to 60 games in a regular season. What's Connor at right now? 46 already. So, okay. I mean, he'd have to only play 10 to 12 games to get to that magic number that I'm talking about. That's not going to happen. But the biggest thing with Connor Hellebuyck is you look at the numbers, you look at the analytics. He's top 10 in the goaltending when you look at goals save above expectation. The Winnipeg Jets give up a ton of chances. They do. They're not good defensively. They give up a ton of chances. And most nights, Connor Hellebuyck makes a lot of big saves that put his numbers into a very, very top tier in the NHL, again, with goals save above expectation. But does he bring you the confidence to say, hey, that's Connor Hellebuyck from 2 years ago. That's Connor Hellebuyck from 3 years ago. No. You look even last night's game. You know, you're up 3-2 with 7 minutes left against the Dallas Stars. Did you think, this game is in the bag? We're going to win 3-2. We're going to win 4-2 in an empty net? No, you knew that, you know, what Dallas is pushing and Connor's, you know, he may give up another goal. We're going to have to really keep pushing. It was the same thing against Montreal the other day. It's 4-0. Now I know they won 8-4. And when you look at the scoreboard, you say 8-4. Wow, an easy game. It wasn't an easy game. Connor made one big save on the penalty shot. But if that goes in, the game's completely upside down. The goal that he gave up to Anderson, the goal that he gave up to Arturi Lehkonen, I mean, those are bad goals. So I've loved Connor Hellebuyck for many years now. And I still think he's a top-tier goaltender. He just, the it factor that I see in Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy and even Jari to a certain extent and many more is not there this year. And people are like, Marty, you've talked about John Gibson for years, and I'm not a big John Gibson fan, but his numbers are always really good. The analytics show that Gibson faces so many chances, and he's above what an average goalie would do by a mile. And I think that Connor Hellebuyck this year reminds me a lot of John Gibson, is that there's always that I don't trust that the door's going to be shut for the last 10 minutes of the third period. I almost expect him to get beat, and then the Jets have to work extra hard to try to recover.
Well said. Marty Biron is with TSN. He's with MSG, covers the Buffalo Sabres. He's a great friend of our program. Marty, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Oh, and by the way, playing 72 games, the only good thing about that is I had games played bonus that year. So every time I played 10 games, I got a bonus. So when I got to 50, 60, 70, yeah, that was perfect.
You wanted to play 80 at that point in time, right? Yeah. For a diamond, for a dollar.
I was building a house, and every 10 games, I was like, hey, more bricks on the house, or there's a fireplace. So it was great.
That's great, Marty. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, guys. Have a good
weekend.
Yep. You too, Marty. You too. Take care. There he goes, Marty Biron, joining us on the program. Always a great guest. Let's head to break, our final one. When we come back, we'll wrap the show. Dave will do a quick Moose Minute. We'll get you set for tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening against the Rangers. Much more to come. Don't go anywhere. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Okay, are you making room for Big Daddy? Did his computer break or something? I don't know what's going on. Hot mic, though, before there, Mr. Ginsburg.
We've got Ezzy. We've got me. We're right beside each other.
That's good. Yeah. It's about time you guys get a little bit up close and personal with each other. As you put that arm around Dave there, I want you snuggling in there. There you go. What happened to your computer? Did it bring a power bar or what?
I'm not sure what happened. No, I mean, I couldn't get back into the show. I signed out because my computer was, well, at least the internet was freezing there. So I'm not sure what happened there. But hey, I just came upstairs and finishing off the show now with Dave M.
That's beautiful. There's only one way we can finish a quality program like this. You know it. You've been waiting all morning for it. Here it comes.
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Minook Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
What? How's anything?
It's your turn to talk now, Dave.
Oh, well, I mean, I thought you were going to play the intro. I was waiting.
I did play the intro. Well, I don't know what's happening with your guys' computers.
Drew, I'm not so sure, but I certainly didn't see an intro. Ezzy, did you see an intro?
Didn't see an intro.
No intro.
Okay. Well, I promise you I played the intro, and I'm sure the chat will maybe validate that I played the intro.
Let's go to the chat.
Okay, go ahead. Talk about the moose. That's what you need to do.
Well, there's a moose right beside me, or a bear, but the Manitoba Moose coming off a 7-2 win over the Rockford Icehogs on – oh, C-Mac is confirming –
don't know what's going on right now. Ez is sucking down all the bandwidth. He's downloading shows. I don't know what he's on Napster. I'm not sure what Ez is doing down there. But anyways, Moose coming off a big 7-2 win over the Rockford IceHogs on Thursday. Big addition in Austin Pagansky. I know he didn't produce any offense at the NHL level, the Jets in 16 games, but he had 7 goals and 14 assists for the Moose. So he'll nicely augment that Moose roster, which is similar to what I was talking about with the Jets. The Moose were playing well defensively, but they weren't scoring the goals. Now they're going to be able to score the goals. They've got Gustafson, they've got Cease and Essiemont, Poli. They've got Cole Meyer. They've got so many role players on this team, and that's the one benefit to this Moose club is the fact that unlike, you know, the 2017-18 team, which had more talent, you know, as soon as you lost Jack Roslick when Mark Scheifele went down that December, Roslick went up and Hutchinson went up. As soon as they lost those two, the team tanked. This team, they've lost all sorts of guys and they just keep performing. So David Gustafson, he scored his 9th goal of the season that last game. I think it's one of those, I am scared. Look at this guy right beside me. It's like, this is either.
It's a lot of man.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of man right beside me. So it's another opportunity. They're going to obviously, if Nate Beaulieu goes down, they'll lose most likely Ville Heinola. That's just an opportunity. Jimmy Olney will go back to the left side. And Simon Lundmark, the 2019 second rounder, he'll just seamlessly go back into the lineup. I assume they'd maybe go 11-7 with guys just to get him some reps if everything was healthy with the Jets and everything was healthy with the Moose. But like I said, don't sleep on this Manitoba Moose club. You know, they moved from 20th in goals for to 14th. They're the 7th ranked in terms of winning percentage. So they're a solid team. And regardless of what happens with the Jets, we don't expect that the Jets are going to be a dynamo in the playoffs. So, you know, even if they make it, they could get bounced, but the Moose are a legit Calder Cup contender. And, you know, we'll see what kind of paper transactions they make at the trade deadline to put on the Moose roster. But I would be shocked if it wasn't an addition of like Cole Perfetti, Christian Reichel, depending on what his injury status is. And even Christian Vesalainen, who's still eligible to be sent down and can play for the Moose. So, you know, really big opportunity for those guys to gain some valuable experience in playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to win the Calder, but I mean, if this team doesn't win at least 2 or 3 rounds, I'd be shocked, and they could win it all. So a fun team to watch. It'll be a good game today. It's the game this afternoon at 2:00. They're, like I said, it's the rematch against the IceHogs, and the game is the Autism Awareness Acceptance. Sorry, they changed the term. So it's Autism Acceptance, I believe, is now the phrase they're using. And so the Moose, you have to give them credit. They always do a phenomenal job in terms of the jersey promotions and promoting themselves within the community. So it's going to raise a lot of money. The jerseys are unbelievable. They're really slick. Drew, you'll be at the game, so you'll get a chance to see them. But yeah, they're real good.
My son is very my son is very excited to see an ice hog jersey. He's very intrigued by the idea of an ice hog.
Well, he'll be able to see the ice hogs and yeah, and like I said, it should be a real good game. Today for
I
the
showed
Moose,
him a picture of Ezzy and said, that's the closest thing you're going to get to an ice hog.
Drew, I think I'm going to do most of the shows like this just with my arm around Dave M. I think this is a new look that I think we should go with.
Yeah, this just be a little bit. Right. Can you nuzzle him a little bit more? I think I need to see a little bit.
Anywho, so that's your Moose Minute. The Moose are looking to keep it rolling. And you know, amazingly, they lost 3 games. So this is a 9-game homestand. They played the first 6 games already.
Yeah.
3 against Milwaukee, and now how many have they played? They played against Milwaukee, and who did they play last week? Chicago, 2 against Chicago, and now they played 1 against Rockford. But the amazing thing is they lost 3, you know, the last 2 against Milwaukee and the first one against Chicago, but they're still 17-6-0-1 at home. I mean, they're just an unbelievable team at home. Should be a good crowd. I think someone told me it's going to be over 4,000, so not sitting on my lap. I ain't Saint Nick. So no T. Conopoli. He will not be sitting on my lap. My grandparents' chair, I'm not sure, is weight tested to handle.
I might break your lap.
Let's not go there. But so I think should be a really good crowd. Should be a really good game. Should be a lot of excitement. So lots of excitement with the Moose. Folks know what they're getting on the one of the best teams in the AHL.
Dave will have it covered on illegalcurve.com, and you can also follow along on his Twitter feed at ICDave, in addition to ours at illegalcurve.
I look massive right now beside Dave M. Dave's chair is a lot lower than mine, but I look like I'm like 6'5", like 350 pounds. Like I look like I'm like a Braun Strowman.
I got Paul Bunyan beside me.
I was going to say, there was too easy of a fastball over the heart of the plate. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to be friendly. I'm going to be nice. I'm not even going to touch that one. I want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the post-game show, the Saturday show, and the website a possibility. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Thanks to everybody.
By the way, as an aside, I'm just dealing with the ramifications that I gave my earpiece to Ez, and now I got to realize I got to deal with the ramifications. Well, this whole thing is being thrown up. This is not a setup. I might actually just burn my room to the ground.
Oh, yeah, no, I was going to say, you're going to have to put your house up for sale for sure.
I want to thank everyone for joining us on this Saturday morning. Big thanks to Jeff Hamilton and Marty Biron in case you missed either of those interviews. There's an immediate replay available on YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button. Subscribe, as I mentioned. Tell your friends, tell your family the best place to be is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. And again, Saturday mornings with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back tomorrow night right around 8:45 p.m. for a post-game show after the Jets and the New York Rangers. For Dave Ginsburg or Ezra Manouk, now that they're 2-1, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Saturday. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.